All right. Well, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for this evening, all the way from Santa Barbara. Scott, come on up.
Yeah. Thanks, Len. My name is Scott. I'm an alcoholic.
Scott.
Someone left their phone up here?
This is recording your talk.
Okay. Yeah, old habits don't die hard. Glenn, thanks for... So this is how this goes, right? So this is like the least favorite thing I like to do is speak in front of you guys. For me, I much rather sit with one-on-one with a guy and go to the book and work the steps. That's just me. Some people love to speak. They love being up front of the podium, getting all the attention. You know, and my wife has given this girl a cake a couple weeks ago. I'm in line shaking the speaker's hand. My buddy Marty goes, "Hey, Glenn, Scott's got a good story. He'll come up and speak." And I'm like, "Fuck." That's what I get for going to a freaking meeting. You know? Man, you know, I would never thought I would say this, right? So for me, like, I'm really, really, really happy to be in Santa Maria, California on a Sunday night. You know? Because I know it's absolutely necessary for me. And like I shared, I don't like doing this. But I know it's necessary for my sobriety. And I know that, you know, coming up here on a Sunday when there's... I could just be kicking back at home, watching TV. You know, but I know it's necessary to come up here and share, you know, my experience, strength, the hope with you guys. You know, and I want to welcome the guys that are new. Congratulations to my wife, 24 years. That's a freaking long time. You know, and she's my road dog. She's been with me, you know, and my friend Matt, you know, congratulations. 1 year. That's huge.
Thank you.
You know, I've known Matty since I was 5 years old, you know, and he's the only one that we've ever drank and used together. So I'll probably be using him as an example of a lot of my share tonight. You know, my good friend Dylan, who this kid right here, I almost faked an injury because I wanted to hear him speak. Because he's one of those kids, like, got 2.5 years just on fire, doing everything that's right, going to meetings, working with guys, works in recovery or in treatment, you know. And he's just one of those kids that's on fire, really good friend. He's always there when I need him. Our roommate, Caleb, you know, I'll share on Caleb because he's like a living, working 6 and 7 for me, you know. And then my friend, Bo, who came up from Orchid, who I've sponsored, you know. Over the last, 4 years, Bo? Three years? You know, so it's cool that a little crew comes with, right? You know, but, you know, so let's just kind of go back a little bit, right? So I play ice hockey. I coach hockey. I'll get into that a little bit in my story. And I took a puck to the neck 2 weeks ago. So my throat's a little bit jacked up. So if I start talking kind of froggy, I'm not gout out. You know, Stan, good to see you, brother. You know, when I first got sober, so I'll give you guys some stats so you can judge me. You know, because I think, you know what, on a Sunday night, man, for a dollar in the basket, like, you guys want to be entertained as much as possible, right? I know when I spend a buck on a speaker, that dude better make me laugh and he better be funny. You know, because I'm feel all ripped off for a dollar, for a whole hour and a dollar? Fuck, man, come on. You know, excuse my language, it was funny. I was sitting here and I was looking this way and a few more people came in the room. And I remember sharing a couple months ago at the Goleta Valley Community Center. And there was this little old lady and she was sitting right there and she looked like a nun. And it was so hard to speak for 45 minutes without throwing the F-bombs out. Every time I could feel it coming from here and it was coming to here and I'd look at her and she's just like, and I'm like, it was brutal. Stats. So, February 6th of 2009, I'm living with, she's my girlfriend at the time. I'm getting loaded. She's got maybe 15 years, I think, at the time. I'm getting loaded in her house. I don't care about her welfare. I'm shooting dope. I'm drinking. I'm using her car. I don't have any insurance. I probably don't have a license. I'm not sure. Right? I'm completely absorbed with self. I don't care about... I care about her, but I don't care about her because I care about me. And that's all I care about. And I care about the next fix or the next drink, whatever I'm going to get. So we're in NA together, and this is back in 2009. And everybody and all our friends are telling me, oh, he's getting loaded, he's getting loaded. And I'm like, fuck those guys. Like, you don't know what they're talking about. Or they don't know what they're talking about, right? So she finally says, you know what, honey, I love you. I really love you, but you're killing yourself. And get the fuck out of my house, right? And at that time, it was devastating. Like, oh, shit, are you kidding me? Right, but now I know it. Years later, now I know it was the best thing she could have done to me. Because what she did is she basically snapped the shovel, raised the bottom for me to get into treatment. Right? So I go into... So this is on a Friday. I load up the rig one more time. I'm going to fix, and I'm going to turn myself into detox. 14-day detox down in Santa Barbara. So I'm in there, and I'm eating Suboxone, like every good heroin addict does. I'm eating a bunch of Suboxone, you know, and I'm not telling her about it. And because, yeah, I may have checked myself into detox, but I'm not going, you know, I'm not really in for this shit. I didn't want to be here that long. If I knew I'd be here in almost 9 years, I would have really tied one on. a half a gram of dope, and that's the last time I ever got loaded. But I'm eating the Suboxone, Maybe some of you don't know what it is. Maybe some of you do. It's kind of like a... this dude in the Dodgers hat knows what it is, huh? Right on, bro. Right? It's basically a medicine that you take, and it helps you with the withdrawals, and it's basically a substitute for heroin, right? So I'm eating that shit, and I'm eating that stuff for like 6 months, right? And I'm not telling anybody. And at this time, I'm running a sober living home. I'm, you know, I got 8 months. I'm starting to sponsor guys, and I'm telling these guys, hey, man, you need to get off that shit, you know? And I'm eating it. And so we're walking our dogs one day, and I'm just kind of, actually, go back. This is 2 years now. I've taken cakes. I'm sponsoring guys. I got like 2.5 years. I'm living this lie. And we're taking this walk with our dogs, and we go to this little bridge in Goleta. And I'm like, hey, I got to tell you something. And she's like, what? I'm like, well, I've been eating Suboxone for 6 months. I got to change my sobriety name. She's like, what are you talking about? Right? And I said, yeah, you know, I told you about it, and that's a lie. anyways, it just kind of all ties together with the stats. So my sobriety date is August 7th of 2009. I have a sponsor. His name's John Cordero. And I have a home group, which is a men's meeting on Thursday night called Men Without Legs. You know, and those are three super important things to me. Because when I was brand new, I thought the most important thing was money for smokes, money for rock stars, a cruiser bike, and then maybe some chick. Right? Those four things were the most important things in my life. Right? And I remember being like 60 days sober and being with the fellas inside the sober living home and being like, God, man, I can't wait to get out of this place and get a wife and dogs and mortgage and blah, 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 blah. And now the only thing sometimes I'm going to do is go back to that sober living house where all I have to do is just kind of pay my rent and hang out. I love you dearly, honey, but there are some days I want to go back, you know? I love it that we come in here, right? And you know that part of the book, right? We are people who normally would not mix, right? But there among us exists, and I'm paraphrasing, of course. You know, we're similar because we're all trying to get recovery, you know. And I love that we come in here and we can chirp each other and we can laugh at our misery and then all the stupid shit we've done. We're like, I've done that too. You know, you almost killed yourself. Oh, fuck, I've done that 12 times. You know, so for me, right, what is my job here tonight is just kind of sharing a general way what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Right? And for me, I love fucking alcohol. I love alcohol. Alcohol never said, you know what, I'm too busy for you. It never said you're too ugly. It never said you were too tall. It never said you were goofy. It loved me back, right, until it stopped loving me. You know, but I love booze. I love drinking. You know, I didn't just come in at 8 or 9 years old, 10 years old, and just start slamming dope. You know, I smoked weed and drank for years. You know, and I've known this kid, and we've done all kinds of stupid shit together. You know, I think at an early age, for me at least, is that alcohol really took my ambitions away. Because my ambitions when I was a young kid was to, like, maybe make it through high school, maybe get a good job, maybe do X, Y, Z. But alcohol and drugs said, no, not. What you're going to do is you're going to get hepatitis C. What you're going to do is go to state prison. What you're going to do is rob people. What you're going to do is lie to people. What you're going to do is take people's souls and crush them into the ground. That's what drugs and alcohol told me I was going to do. You know? And that's when, you know, when you come in here, or at least when I came in here, it's like, holy shit, man. Like, how am I ever supposed to get sober? Don't you know what I've done? I've done some horrible things. You know? And what happened is people like Billy or Glenn or someone that's been here longer than me, they say, you know what, man, I've done the same things and you're in the right place. And that was huge for me to hear. Because I had isolated myself living in Las Vegas between 2000 and 2006 when I got extradited back to California. Right? And I isolated myself so deeply that I couldn't even leave like a one, maybe some of you guys can relate to this, I couldn't even leave a 1 mile radius of my house. I would start getting nervous. Like either my pipe or my rig or my dope or something was back there and it was like a magnet. I couldn't go anywhere. I remember going to Thanksgiving dinners at these casinos with my mom and like just being so strung out and sucked up and just so sick, man. And she'd be like, come on, honey, let's go to Thanksgiving dinner. And I'd be there for like 10 minutes and I'd eat a couple bites of food and I'd run in the bathroom and smoke a hit of crack. And I'd come back out. I was just all fucking just buzzing. And I'd be like, we got to go, mom. We got to go. And I would just ruin her night. You know, this is the first time I've spoke, you know, at a podium. My mother passed away earlier this year of cancer. So this is the first time I've spoke, you know, about her because she's always been with me, you know, she's always been with me and I might get a little bit emotional, you know, but that's all right. You know, she's always been with me, and, you know, and I did some messed up things to that lady, you know, stole from her, treated her like shit. You know, she had to watch her son be some kind of, you know, have some potential growing up and then just become this person that I didn't want to become, you know, so I loved drugs and alcohol. Absolutely love them. You know, I couldn't believe it that when, you know, when you're new, I guess, or when I'm new, it's like, oh, how unfair it is. I can't use and drink anymore. The party's over. It's like a party. I couldn't even find a vein. I'd be in the bathroom for like 5 hours trying to get high. And by the time I got high, I would be sick already again. You know, and that's no party. A party is like when you go to the beach with friends and you have a cooler and you have a few beers and you play volleyball and you hang out and that's a party. You know, there is no party, but the illusion, right? The delusion that my mind suffers from drugs and alcohol is just so great that I think that I'm missing out on something. You know, oh, poor me. I can't do this anymore. It's like, fuck, man. That shit was not living. You know, that's just barely surviving. You know, I wasn't really a blackout drinker. I was more of a pass-out drinker. Until someone like my friend Max said, hey, why don't you try this? A little Peruvian marching powder, you know? A little bump, keep the drinking going. You know, and that was a great mix for me. I love drinking and doing coke. That was great. You know, it's a little expensive. Nowadays, you could probably get speed right around the corner for probably like $40 for an 8-ball. You know.
You never saw a pig, now where?
Here's my ATM, bud. Go get some money. No, but you know, so it's funny, right? You see the progression. You know, if it would have just stayed with, see, the reason why I bring up the drugs thing, and I know we're in Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, is because alcohol really, yeah, it destroyed my life. But if it was just for alcohol alone, I don't think it would have got me here, right? And Bill talks about it in the page of top of 7. He says, you know what? I was drinking gin and a high power sedative, and that soon landed me on the rocks. And I was thinking back to that because I'd always had the argument, should I be an NA? Should I be an A? Should I be an NA? Should I be an A? Right? But when I read that, I was like, wait a second, Bill was a little dope fiend. You know? And then a few pages later on, it says that he was using high power sedative and morphine. And that landed him in institutions. And that really jacked his life up. Right? Yeah, my life was shitty drinking. But as soon as I started fixing on top of that, my life really went downhill. Right? And every ambition I had was out the window. You know, when I came to you guys in February, before my little Suboxone trip, I was 160 pounds. I had the graveyard tan. I was green. I was full of holes. I was dirty. You know, when I was living in Las Vegas at my mom's house, I was on methadone. I would dig in dumpsters. And I'd try and find little things, and I would be all tweaked out, and I would try and find little things and try and pawn them off or sell them. You know, and they actually kicked me out of the methadone clinic. They said I stank too much. That's pretty hard to do, to get kicked out of the methadone clinic. You know. You know, so we don't have to sit on this drunk log for you guys all know what it's like. I'm using, I go to prison, I get out, I'm trying to use and fake tests and this and that, and parole officer's like, hey man, this lady named Robin Nason, I don't know if she works up here. And she's like, hey man, are you dirty? And for the first time in my life, I actually told the truth. And I said, yes. She said, well, you better get to some meetings, man. You know, you better get to some meetings because I'm going to have to lock you back up. And I did. I went to Narcotics Anonymous and didn't really have a sponsor. Talked to a guy about being a sponsor and pretty much stayed abstinent from drugs and alcohol on my own for 4 months. And then something happened. Can't remember. Probably met some girl and that took me out. But you know what? Walking across the street would have taken me out. I can't blame it on her. You know, and so I was trying. I was using. I was living in sober living. I was using. I'd come to meetings. I'd stay sober for a little while. I'd get loaded for a long while. Stay sober. But I just, what you guys told me, you guys said, keep coming back. Keep coming back. And in between nods, I must have heard a couple things. You know, and I just kept coming back, and me and Jill got together, and that's when that thing happened, when I went to detox. You know, and I go to detox for 14 days, I get out, I move right into sober living, me and Jill are starting to date, and it worked for us, because usually when I have an obsessive mind, right? I have a looping thought, or a thought that crowds other thoughts out, every other thought out, right? That's what obsession means. It's either a looping thought or one thing. And that's usually like woman, 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 woman. Or drugs, drugs, drugs. Or motorcycle, motorcycle. Or car, car, or house, whatever, right? It's never just, there's never a balance in my life like there sort of is today. Right? So I'm living in sober living. She's got her own place. I mean, she's 15 years sober at the time. So we would see each other a little bit. Because I know how I am, and I would just hook up on the hip, and that would be it. You know, and she's working on her spirituality. I'm starting new on my steps. I'm trying to get physically fit. I'm trying to get spiritually fit through the step work. And we saw each other for a little bit, right? And, you know, and it worked for us. Right, because it's usually like when I meet a girl, it's like, hey, what's her name? How you doing? You want to get married? Right, and we had this little plan. We're gonna go on 40 dates, and you're gonna work your steps. You're gonna have a sponsor. I'm not your higher power. Blah blah blah. Right, so we did this little thing, and it worked out great. You know, I got active in Alcoholics Anonymous. The reason why I went to Alcoholics Anonymous is because she was pretty active in Narcotics Anonymous. And all her friends were like, oh man, you're just here for her. And I say, you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to AA. You stay in NA, and we'll do it separately. You know, and you know, we're both in Alcoholics Anonymous today. And it's a gift, right? So I'm managing a house. This guy says, hey, I want you to manage my house. I like what you do. I'm like, dude, I got 90 days sober. Like, how do you know what I'm doing? Like, and it's like sponsoring someone you're brand new, right? Like, I'm going to fucking kill this guy if I try to take him through the book. You know, but there's people that have been around here longer than us. And all's my sponsor is like, no, no, no. Here's how you're going to do this. Right? And so I'm managing sober living down in Santa Barbara, getting super active. And it was fun. Sober living was absolutely necessary for me because I need structure and I know how to program. You know, and I did my year there, and we got a place. You know, and it's been good. You know, I told you about the whole little Suboxone trip I was on. You know, I got clean and clear with that. Finally got a sobriety date that I can hold on to. I'm working. Dylan works at the rescue mission down in Santa Barbara. I'm going down there a lot. I'm doing H&I. Guys are asking me, hey, man, can you sponsor me? Right? I'm down there. I'm sponsoring like 12 guys at a time. I'm down there. I'm neglecting my wife. I'm supposed to be at home. I'm down there. Because, once again, it's obsession. It doesn't matter if I'm doing the right thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? Because a better demonstration lies in our occupations. And I can't remember the other one. Fair is an occupation or something, right? So it's easy for me to be like, well, honey, I know I'm gone all of Saturday and Sunday where we should be hanging out, but I'm working with 12 guys down there. And she's like, I don't give a shit. You know, so I'm super active down there, but it's just building me to be a better character or a better man, I guess, you know. And my AA story being sober is pretty boring, really. You know, it really is kind of boring. So I get some decent jobs, you know, because now people that I've burnt, they're like, hey, man, you're doing pretty well. Here's the keys to our shop. Here's a truck, you know. And I'm starting to gain this trust back. You know, and that was super important, because maybe if you're from Santa Maria, it's pretty small, like Santa Barbara, like people know you. Right? And it's kind of hard to walk down the street and people are like, oh, yeah, there goes Scott, that fucking asshole. Or like, hey, dude, you got that $200 you owe me? You know, but the process of working the steps and trying to do the right thing and pay back the money as best as possible and just trying to like walk down the street with my head held high, that's the real gift, right? It's not that walking down the street like, you see that dude across the street, next thing you know, you're like fucking dipping into the... You know, because that's, you know, for me, I don't have to be locked up in a cell or in a state penitentiary or a county jail to be a prisoner. Right. You know, I could be in a house in Montecito, in a beautiful home, and be locked in my own mind as a prisoner. Right? And that's really the only thing that I really wanted out of Alcoholics Anonymous, is just to just let that mind just be at ease. Right? Because we all know, or I know, or, you know, we all know what it likes to have that alcoholic torture. Right? A slave to it. You know, and that's not a cool thing. You know, so it was great, man. When my mom was still alive, we'd go up to Las Vegas where she lived, and we'd go up there and visit her. She's the one person that I probably did the most dirt to, physically, emotionally, spiritually, all that stuff. Right? So I thought that was probably the most important person that I made the amends to. And it wasn't about the, hey, mom, I'm sorry. You know, I was a dirtbag son. It was about writing out the Mother's Day cards. It was about, and then sending it off, you know, the birthday cards. You know, when she was hurting, it's like, hey, Scott, listen, I need $200 every week for the next X amount of time. It was actually like having a job and then sending her that money. It was the demonstration, right? Because on her deathbed earlier this year, like, we were cool. We were totally 100% current. And that's never happened. And she knew when she was going on to wherever she's going next, that her son was going to be okay. And that's because of you guys. You know, I didn't pick that up in a book. I did pick up in a book. It's that blue book, wherever it is. But that's because of you guys. You know, I could have never done this on my own. I love this little saying right here. Contempt to prior investigation. Investigation, right? Because I knew what, you know, is there people with a lot of years? You probably have a lot of time, right? Right? I would come in here and see someone a lot of time and go, ah, that lady's a liar. There's no way. But you know, I'd come in here and if I had like 0.1 days or 2 days, and I'd be sitting here shaking and baking, and I just kind of want the heat to be off, and I'd hear someone share, and they're like, or like my wife, happy birthday to you for 24 years, like, who gives a fuck? Like, you poor thing. You've been sober 24 years, like, you poor thing. You know, but like the guys that stood up as new, man, like, welcome. You know, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and one of the things I always, your life's going to get better. No, it's not. It's going to change. You know, it's my responsibility, your responsibility to choose what you do with that. You know, the only thing we can guarantee is that your life will change. You know, so yeah, man, just about 2 years ago, you know, I've been out of jail so long, they let me go back into it. You know, so I take a little H&I panel up to the county jail, to the men's honor farm once a month on Wednesdays. That's like the same thing when I came here. It's like who says that kind of shit? Hey, guys, I'm really happy to be in this jail tonight on a Tuesday. Or excuse me, on a Wednesday. Right? But I know, because that's me if I stop doing this stuff. Right? But that's absolutely, that's what's like plugging into the outlet for me, is going up to the county jail and doing H&I. Right. You know, so so that lady, that's my mom, you know, she we were current, and that's a good feeling for me. You know, I always thought that the day she's going to die is the day I'm going to get loaded. Right? What I didn't realize is that I've been preparing 9 years in Alcoholics Anonymous for such an event to happen. You know? And when I'm on the way up to Las Vegas to go see her, and she's you know, she's just found out she has stage 4 breast cancer. They don't know how long she's going to live. And I'm driving in that desert, and there's nothing on the radio station. All I have is myself. And I'm just thinking. And what you guys have taught me over the last 9 years is, you know what? You're going to be present. You're going to be an adult. And it's about her. It's not about you. You know? And those were simple. Those were simple to list to. But the 6 inches between my ears is what messes it up. And it always does. You know? You know, so when she finally passed, it was like, all right, I'm okay. I'm going to be okay, because the blanket of Alcoholics Anonymous or your guys' arms just kind of like carried me with dignity and grace. You know, so I thank you guys for that. You know, so Caleb lives with us. So me, my wife, and we all share a little house in Goleta, right? And I remember at, well, how long we lived together, Caleb, 2 years almost? Year and a half, right? So Caleb was all on fire too, like Dylan. And I was at like year 6 and a half or something, 7 and a half. And I've gotten resentments at meetings in Santa Barbara. I never knew that with 200 meetings, you could actually like go away from the 3 you normally go to and go to another one. Right? If this was my home group or the meeting I come to every Sunday night and Glenn pissed me off, I would just go away for a year. I wouldn't go over to Orchid or to the next meeting, which is probably a couple blocks from here, because I'm stubborn. Right? And I'd rather be like, you know what, Glenn fucked me over, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And you know what, I hate this meeting. And I'm not coming back. Right? So I'm cut it down to like one meeting a week. Nobody's asking me to speak. Nobody's asking me to sponsor them. And I can't figure out. And I'm getting more resentful. Like, what the fuck? Why is people asking me? It's like, because they don't want what you have, dummy. But I can't see that, or I can't put that with this. I just can't understand it. Like, what are you talking about? I got 8 years. I mean, I should be sponsoring a ton of guys, right? And here's another little one she's done for me. This is my little Eskimo right here, right? So I haven't gone to meetings for a while. I'm not working any steps. We get in this little argument, like a good married couple does, and she goes, "You know what? What'd you say to me? You are wearing on me." You are wearing on me, and I don't want anything you have. I was like, damn, that's harsh. Right? And our buddy Chris, he leads this men's meeting. He's like, "Hey, Scott, do you want to come and lead the Wednesday night meeting?" And just like when Glenn asked, my first instinct is like, "No, I don't want to do it. I don't want to go back to that meeting." And of course, I said, "Yes, of course, I'll do it." You know, and I went in there and led, and I just basically just bleh, just threw up on all you guys about how sick I am and what an idiot I am. And the funny thing, so Caleb, right? So I'm in this really bad spot in my life, which I don't think so. And Caleb's like, "Man, that's not spiritual, or you should be going to meetings." And it's like, "Fuck you, buddy." Like, you got three years, dude. Who are you talking to? You know? Because I mean, for me, like you probably can't tell by looking at me, but I got like really bad ego. Right? But on that, so I have a really high ego and I have a really low self-esteem. Right? So when I come in here, and for me, like right now, I feel like I'm sucking. I'm all over the place. I'm whatever. Right? I'm kind of out of the groove. But to me, my head's like, you're shredding, man. You're going to save a bunch of lives here tonight. Right? So that's on one shoulder. And then on the other shoulder, it's like, you're a piece of shit, dude. Like, nobody wants to hear you. You should probably just get this water, turn this thing off, and walk out of here. Right? But what AA has done is it's taken that high ego and low self-esteem, and it has kind of got it to about right here. And sometimes it flips and goes like that, kind of ebbs and flows. But it's not so much, I think I'm God, I think I'm the best thing in the world. And down here, I'm just like, God, you're such a piece of shit, man. Nobody likes you. You know, it's got me here. And for me, that's a good place. You know, so she says that to me. I go to this meeting, I lead, and I'm talking about action, about getting back in action. And you know how it is when you're new, it takes a while to get kind of out of that funk and get kind of spiritual, right? It was instantaneous. Went home that night, did 11 step, woke up in the morning, did 11 step. And instantly it was like, I'm floating again. I'm on that pink cloud that we hear about, right? And I got super active, and I think even the guy asked me to sponsor him, and that lasted about a week, and then I was back to fuck that meeting. But no. I haven't been around here a turbo long time. Amount of time, excuse me. But I know this, the longer I stay sober, the less I know. Because when I was at 3 years sober, I knew everything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew everything about what this gentleman in the black hat should be doing. And I would tell you from the podium, or I would tell you. You know? And as I learned that I have to, through humiliating circumstances, that I become humble. Right? And those humiliating circumstances are, nobody wants what I have. My beautiful wife says, "You're an asshole. I don't want what you have." Those are humiliating to me. Because one who thinks so highly of himself, right, is being shown by his peers and his people that love him that, you know what, buddy? Knock that shit off. You know? So I'm just really trying to keep it simple. You know, like my friend Matt, he doesn't go to a terrible amount of meetings, right? And we don't have a monopoly on this, right? This kid calls me once a week. We talk about life. We talk about drugs and alcohol. We talk about marriage. We talk about motorcycle riding. And if that's what could keep him sober for 1 year, God be with him. Right? Because when I was 2 or 3 years sober, if you weren't going to the Wednesday night meeting, if you weren't going to the Monday night book study, if you weren't sponsoring a dozen guys, if you weren't doing this, you were doing it all wrong. And what I've learned is that, you know what? How can I help the alcoholic, of course, but how can I take what I've learned here, take it outside for service and helping others? We got an ice rink down in Goleta now. I've played ice hockey my whole life. When the rink opened, I came off a reconstructive knee surgery, so I wasn't working for a while. I talked to a guy. He's like, "Yeah, man, we're looking for some coaches." You know? So I went and I coached these 12-year-olds. They're 10 through 12. This is what gets me. I was describing to you how I used to live when I was living in Las Vegas. I'm 145 pounds. I'm strung out. I'm drunk all the time. I absolutely look like shit. I come in here, and you guys teach me how to talk and how to act out in the outside world. And they pay me to coach these kids. And they leave me with their kids. Now, Santa Barbara gets pretty hot, I'm sure, as Santa Maria does, so I can't walk around in long-sleeve shirts all the time. And some of the parents look at you like, oh my God, look at this guy. Right? But once they get to know you, they start trusting you. Right? I didn't learn that stuff over at... I mean, can you explain where I'd learn that? But I learned it. I learned how to suit up, show up, be accountable, have some integrity. Right? Be a man of my word. And these people pay me to coach their kids. Right? The University of the UCSB, our college down in Santa Barbara, did the same thing. Like, we're looking for a coach. And the guy says to me, hey, Scott, we really like the way you act and the way you conduct yourself. And I think you'd be perfect for this job. And I'm like looking around, like, is there another Scott here? Because that on my own, in my own plan, that could have never happened. You know, that absolutely could have never happened. And they pay me. And it's like, holy shit. You know, I get to do what, that's a dream job for me. You know? And then I got this construction job I do Monday through Thursday, and I absolutely hate it. Because I'm sensitive, like on page 125. We alcoholics are sensitive people. It takes us, paraphrasing, of course, a long time to overcome this gross handicap. All right, so my boss says, you know what, man, I need you to do some labor today because I'm a supervisor. And I'm like, labor? Fucking, I don't do labor. I don't even have any tools. Just a year ago, I was doing labor. And then 1 year later, I'm a supervisor. I'm like, I don't do labor, man. Like, fuck are you talking about? And I want to quit. And I want to just move to Costa Rica with the $400 I have in my savings account. That should get us through, honey, for a couple days. So I coach hockey. I help kids. We had this like alumni game thing where I had the kids play a bunch of old guys like me, and the old guys just kicked their ass. And they came all drunk. These kids came all bombed and they were falling all over the place. And I remember getting them all together in the next practice. I'm like, all right, boys, come here for a second, man. I said, listen. And the only reason I could say this is because I speak from experience. Because that would have been me in college. I'd have been all fucked up and played hockey. You know, I said, listen, boys. And you know, you can't be doing that shit. Right? And one of the kids I brought to a meeting one day. You know, because it's not about like the X's and O's in sports, right? It's not about the X's and O's. It's about the life lessons. It doesn't matter how many sponsees I have. It's what am I doing with those sponsees? How am I trying to be as helpful as possible, right? That's what it means to me today. It's not about, hey, I'm speaking at the Pacific Group on a Wednesday night. Boo, yay. Right? I'd rather be up here at the 1600 Club in Santa Maria on a Sunday night speaking to a small group, right? And, you know, so it's almost 8. I'll probably go a little bit short today. It's funny, right? So we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, or let me just speak for myself. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. It's absolutely the last place I want to go. Everybody in here is a loser. You guys are all quitters, right? I had no example that waving the white flag of surrender was to save my life, rather than it's, you know what, you're just a quitter. It's been absolutely contempt prior to investigation, the best thing that's ever happened to me. It's been the best thing that ever happened to my wife. It was the best thing that ever happened to my mom. It's the best thing that ever happened to Santa Barbara County. You know, I think the trick for me, at least, in staying sober is hanging out with guys that are all fresh and on fire. You know? Because it's really easy for me, because I'm just an isolator at trade. I'm happy in my Barca lounger with my chew and the controller. You know, I can do that for hours by myself. It's really hard sometimes for me to like reach my hand out. And, you know, Thursday night we have a meeting, some men's meetings, probably 100, 125 people, depending on, you know, every Thursday. And it's just really easy to just go over to these guys and be like, hey, man, how you doing? And you see that new guy, he's over there shaking and baking, or he's feeling super uncomfortable. He's looking down at his shoes the whole time. It's really hard to go over there and go, hey, man, how you doing? My name's Stella. Because when I was brand new, some guy that we know, his name's LB, he gave me a hug and said, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. When I was brand new back in 07. And I hadn't been touched by a human in a long time. And when he gave me a hug and he embraced me, he said, welcome. That was the first time I'd felt any kind of kindness or warmth in a long, long time. You know? So I got to remember that I'm never too busy to try and help the new guy. You know, that just a simple handshake or, hey, man, how you doing? Could be a game changer for somebody. Because it's so easy to be in that one rut the whole time and just go over and talk to the buddies, bullshit, right? So I got to remember that. That I'm never too busy to try and help the still suffering alcoholic. I have no idea, because my idea has got me sitting here and talking in front of this podium. Right? Got me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have no idea what God's plan is for me. Right? It's my job to take the action and do what He would have me do. You know? Congratulations on your guys' year. Lynn, my throat's kind of jacked up, so I'm going to wrap it up here. But I appreciate you guys being here. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. This gives God another round.